بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين الحمد لله الذي هدانا لهذا وما كنا لنهتدي لولا ان هدانا الله والصلاة والسلام على اشرف الانبياء والمرسلين سيدنا ومولانا ابي القاسم محمد
اللهم صل على محمد
اما بعد فقد قال الله الحكيم في كتابه المجيد بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الف لام ميم احسب الناس ان يتركوا ان يقولوا امنا وهم لا يفتنون صلوات محمد وعلى اله
membership dues, you know.
Mom's like, you know, oh, you want to be a member of us? So there's no membership form. There's warnings. The mom is saying, listen, you want to be a Shia? Then you are going to go through trouble. Are you ready to face those hardships? If you're ready, then you can join the club. And if you're not ready, then this is not the best place for you. You see, and hence, to them, they have shown that the basis of tests and trials is the love of Ahlul Bayt also. But we need to understand these trials. We need to know these trials because we are being asked to be patient in the face of trials. And if you don't know the reasons why these trials come, then it would be hard for us to be patient when we see the trials, when we know what's happening. If you know the reason why you're being tested and how it's coming to you, then it would be easier for you to be patient knowing why you're being tested. And that is what we are discussing right now. And there are four reasons why you go through sufferings in life as a believer. The first one I mentioned yesterday, and that was there are certain sins that we do that bring about sufferings. And we are told to go through that list of sins. Whenever you go through hardships in life, if you see that nothing is working out in life, then first of all, you are asked to see, listen, there's this list of sins, go through the sins and make a checklist. Have I done any of these things? If you have done, then it means that's the reason why you're suffering. That's the reason why you're suffering. I went through two of them yesterday. One is to make fun of believers, and the second one is to disrespect your parents. If you do these two things, then you are going to get sufferings in your life. Nothing will be successful in your life. And there are other list of things that you can see that bring upon hardships in your life. You go through that checklist, and then when you went through that checklist and saw that you haven't done any of these sins, then you go to the second reason that I'm going to mention today. And from here we understand why Allah puts us through these hardships and difficulties. We need to have an understanding of it, of why it happens, so that we can be patient in the face of these trials. Salawat wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. If you are reading a book, let's say you know there's a book, you just open the book, you read a book, just one page of it, and you will see that on that page you read that one person beat up the other person. And you're like, this is wrong. If that's all you read, this is wrong. Or let's say you're watching a movie, and you just watch a clip of the movie. So when you watch the movie, just watch one clip, you will see that, for example, the hero of the movie is beating up the villain. That's all you watched. So now you're saying, this person is wrong. He's doing injustice to the other person, he's beating him up. Right? Now obviously, if you just watch a clip of the movie, that's all you understand from the movie, and if we ask you what was the movie about, you say injustice. If we ask you, well, what's the book about? You just read one page. It's terrible. You know, this person is beating up the other person. It's horrible. And he's unjust. He's wrong. That's what happens. You read a page of the book, it looks odd because you never understood the whole story. If you watch a clip of the movie, you never understood the whole story. What is the beginning? What is the end? What really happened? Sometimes this is what happens in life. Sometimes this is what happens in life. When we look at things in life, we are looking at a page from the book. We are looking at a clip from the whole movie. And hence, it seems unjust, it seems wrong, nothing seems to make sense, and all the ends are untied, and this is just a place of bloom. Well, a similar case happened with Prophet Musa. One time he was walking, you know, in his journey. He came to a place. It was an oasis in the desert, and there was a hill next to it, so we went on the hill. Went on the hill and was relaxing there. And in a short period of time, he saw something astonishing. Something astonishing that rattled his mind. First, what he saw was a person, a horse rider, who came to the oasis and, you know, rested there. His horse also drank water. He also drank the water and rested there for a few. And then he got on the horse and left. As he left, Prophet Musa saw that he left his money bag behind, in his wallet, his money bag. He left it and he rode off. He didn't see it. He got on the horse and he just left and he forgot his money bag. And you know, in those days, money bag means it's your whole life's earning. I mean, the wallet we have today, most of our wealth is in the bank or invested in somewhere. But in those days, the whole wealth of a person is on him in his money bag. That's it. That's his whole life's earning right there. And so he left it and he went off. And before Prophet Musa could say anything, he was gone. And then he saw someone else come from another side. A shepherd. A shepherd with a sheep came there. He came and his sheep were drinking the water. He was resting and all of a sudden his eyes stopped on the money bag. And he saw the money bag. And he jumped up and ran to the money bag and opened it. And Prophet Musa, who's away from there, and he's looking at the scene, he sees that he can see a big smile on his face. And he found a treasure. You know, he found money. He looked to his left and right to see if anyone's around there. He took the money back and took his sheep and started hastily going away. Before Prophet Musa can say anything, he was also gone. And you know, for my kids here, just for you know that if you find money like that on the street, Islam says it's makruh to pick it up. It is makruh to pick up anything that is not yours. It's not haram to pick it, it's makruh to pick it up. Because once you pick it up, now you're in charge of making sure it reaches its owner. So now you have to start announcing in the masjid, in the newspaper, to make sure that the owner gets this money. Right? So it's better just to leave it there so that the owner can come back and get it. Right? If everyone does that, then you'll see that if anyone loses anything, they will never lose it because they can always find it where they lost it. If we understand what Islam wants us to do. So you see that this shepherd ran away with the money. Now when he ran away with the money, now a third person came. This is a very, you know, older person, pious person. You know, and you know, you can see that he is muttaqi, pious. He came there. And he came to rest. And all of this is happening and Prophet Musa is looking at it. And then he sees the original horse rider come back, looking for his money back. And he is frantically searching for his money, for his bag. He doesn't see the money bag anywhere, but he put it. He looks at the old person over there. He sees the old person there and goes up to him and starts asking him. And before you know it, the discussion escalates to argument. The argument escalates to violence and he ends up killing the old man. Saying that he is the one who stole the money. The old man is dead now. And now the horse rider gets on his horse and goes away. Musa, Prophet Musa, looks at this whole scene and he's startled. He's like, what's going on? Ya Allah, what did I just witness? What did I just witness? There is no unjust ruler here. I mean, look at this. I mean, this is not an unjust rule. This is not no one's kingdom. This is your kingdom. This is your place. You rule here. Fir'aun is not ruling here. There's no one who's doing injustice so that this injustice happens. This is your kingdom and this injustice is happening in your kingdom. So he's startled now. He's like, what's going on? He's startled and he says, what is this injustice happening in your kingdom? And you are a just ruler. How can you let this injustice happening? So Allah called to Musa and said, Musa, what do you see? He said, I saw injustice. There is complete injustice, meaning the person who's the thief, he got away, and an innocent person is killed instead of him. What kind of justice is this? Musa is confused. We would be also. Right? We would be also if we see what this happened. So now Allah says, Musa, is this really injustice? He said, yes, I mean, that's the way it looks. He said, now Musa, let me tell you the rest of the story. You saw the clip of the movie, you read a page of the book, and you thought this was injustice? Let me tell you the rest of the story, Musa. You see, this horse rider and this shepherd, their fathers were friends and partners in business. The shepherd's father lent money to this horse rider's father so that they can start a business. But what happened is that the horse rider's father died. No one knew that the shepherd's father gave him the money. So no one knew that they owe him the money. Now that money belongs to his heir, and that is the shepherd. Musa, what you saw was injustice, was me returning the money that his father lent him to that person. You see, that person came there and the money in the bag was exactly the amount that his father lent to the horse rider's father. I wanted to return that money. But ya Allah, what about that muttaqi person, you know? That pious person, that old pious person, you know, that, you know, you want to go and kiss his hands, you know? How about him? Musa, that old pious person was not always pious. In old age, everyone becomes pious. Musa, in old age, everyone becomes pious. He wasn't always pious. You know, I told you that the horse rider's father is dying. And guess who killed him? This old person killed him. He killed him, and no one knew that he killed him. Today, I took revenge of that murder by the hands of his own son. Musa, what you thought was complete injustice is complete justice in my hands. Salawat alaikum. My friends, when we look at things, our sight is so short that we only read a page of the book or we see a clip of the movie and we think that this is injustice. Allah who sees the whole story and Allah who knows the beginning and the end knows how justice is being done in this kingdom. How justice is happening in this kingdom. That's the reason when we don't see the whole picture, we think and we are assuming that this is injustice happening. This is injustice happening. We don't see the whole picture. We just look at one earthquake and hundreds of thousands of people are dying and dead. That's one clip we are looking at. We don't know the whole picture. What is the beginning and what is the end? We don't know where it started. We don't know where it's going to end. But we know that the one who's ruling this kingdom is a just ruler. You see, and all these loose ends are going to be tied. But we don't see them being tied. And then when he is tying them, we are thinking this is injustice because we never knew who made those knots in the first place. You see, this is the reason, my friends, that a lot of times we look at things and they look like unjust. But you see that Allah is doing His justice. Allah is doing His justice. Now, why does this happen? Allah explained this in the Quran and He gave three examples to explain it. And you all heard about this many times over. And I'm not going to go into details of this incident that Allah mentions in the Quran. And this happened between Prophet Musa and Prophet Khidr. And you know the incident where these two prophets met. And I'm just going to explain a little bit so that we understand this angle as we try to get the meaning of why these trials happen. And Allah explained the reason. The second reason I'm mentioning in this incident that happened between Musa and Khidr. Send me salawats. And you know that Musa went to Khidr. Musa, on one hand, is the alim of the Sharia. He's the Ulul Azm prophet, the messenger of Allah. And he is the expert on the Sharia of Allah and the law of Allah. No one knows more than he does on the face of earth regarding the Sharia of Allah at the point that Musa was alive. He was the Ulul Azm prophet, he was in charge of Allah's message, and that was it. And on the other hand, you had Prophet Khidr. His expertise was not in the Sharia. You see, his expertise was on a different type of knowledge. A different type of knowledge that is happening behind closed doors. Behind the curtain. See, when you go and watch a play, a drama, there's a stage. The stage is what you see. The actors on the stage is what you see. And you see that this is a stage, this is a play, this is a drama, and you see it. But behind the curtains, there are many other people who are making this happen. You see, there are many other people working behind closed curtains. You don't see them. And the rules are different. On the stage, the rules are different. Behind the stage, the rules are different. Behind the curtain, the rules are different. And there are certain set of laws that dictate what's happening in the seen world, and there are different set of rules that dictate what's happening behind the curtains. The knowledge of what's happening in front is called the Sharia. The knowledge that's happening behind closed doors is called Taqweed. There's Ilmi Sharia and there's Ilmi Taqweed. There are different sets of rules that happens behind it. And hence Allah, when He says that He is Alimul Ghayb wa Shahada, it means He is the Alim of the rules that are hidden and happening behind closed doors, and He is the Alim of the one things that are happening in the apparent world. You see, this is the easiest and simplest way I can explain what is Ghayb and what is Shahada. That what's happening in front of us, the rules that dictate this is called Sharia. What's happening behind closed doors, the rules that dictate it is called Ilm al-Taqweem. And when these two ilm, it's a whole different set of rules. So Musa is the alim of the Sharia, Khidr is the alim of Taqweem. Musa is the alim of Shahada, Khidr is the alim of Ghayb. There are two different knowledges and two oceans of knowledge. So when Musa and Khidr met, Allah says that the meaning of Musa and Khidr, He described it as Majmaul Bahrain, the meaning of two oceans. The ocean of Zahir and the ocean of Batin. Both of them met. And now, Musa said to Khidr, I heard that you have a knowledge I don't have. Khidr said, yes. He said, I want to learn that. I want to learn that. And Khidr said, listen, you won't be able to be patient with me. I mean, I would tell Khidr, right? Khidr, who are you talking to? You're talking to Musa, the Ulul Azm prophet, and you're saying he cannot be patient? You're saying that he cannot be patient? Who else can be patient? I mean, someone who worked with the Jews and Bani Israel, they have to be patient. If Allah sent them, sent Musa to those people, right? Obviously He has patience. That's why Allah sent him there. If He's able to work with them, who else can be patient with you now? See, Allah chose Musa for this. Allah chose Musa for this. Because who else can have a better resume of patience than him? That he was patient in all the trials that his people gave him, he was still patient. And so now, Khidr is saying, Musa, you cannot be patient. Musa said, listen, I will be patient. Alright. Khidr said, let's go. See my words, what happened? You know the story. I'm just going to go through it. They went along. They came to a village where the villagers are fishermen. They're fishing. Their whole life is dependent on their boat. That's the means of income. You know, Musa and Khidr get in the boat, and Khidr right away starts making a hole in the boat. He made a hole in the boat, and Musa said, "What are you doing?" "What in the boat? Can you see that?" What kind of question is that? Making a hole in the boat. I know you're making a hole in the boat, but you know what? This is wrong. It's haram. And really, it is haram. In the law of Sharia, it is haram to damage someone else's property. I mean, let's say you come over here to Zambia, you know, you want to kick out something against someone, you go to his car and scratch it. It's haram. You can't scratch someone's car. And here you see he's making a hole in the boat, and that boat also is a means of their income, the poor people. He said, "This is wrong." And Khidr looked at him and said, "I told you, you won't be patient with me." Musa, I mean, really, you know, to him, he's seeing something that's haram. And he's a mu'min. You know, he's not someone who's going to see something wrong and be quiet. He's going to say it out. He's going to do Amr bil Ma'ruf. He's going to do Nahy bil Munkar. He's going to say it. That's his job as a prophet. To say what is right. And he said what is right. He said what is right. And then, here you see, Prophet Khidr is saying, "Listen, you cannot be patient with me." Now Musa said, all right, you know what? I'm going to let this pass. Let's go forward. Let it pass, let's go forward. They started walking forward. You know? So they went forward and they come across this beautiful young child. This beautiful young child they come across. And Musa is admiring the young child and his beauty. Anyone, you know, will see a cute little child, they'll be like, "Cute little child." Anyone will be like, "Good, right?" Everyone likes cute little children. And so now you happen, and what happened? As Musa is admiring the young child, there was Khidr again. He starts to kill him. And he kills him. And Musa is like, "What are you doing that for?" Killed him, can't you see? "And I know you killed him, but this is wrong. This is wrong. I mean, you killed an innocent young child. Right? You killed an innocent young child, and really, in the Sharia, it's haram. You cannot do it." Again, Khidr is saying, "I told you, you cannot be patient with me." And now really, people in Musa's place, they're thinking, "Wait, are you the right person? Are you really Khidr? Are you the right person here? I mean, what is your resume? Let me see your resume. Who hired you for the job?" And really, here he goes, and he damages someone's property, and then you go ahead and you kill an innocent child. I mean, who would expect that from a prophet? I mean, understand this. Who would expect that from a prophet? And here, Musa also has a right to be upset. Musa also has a right to be upset. He's saying, this is not what prophets do. This is not what believers do. Let alone prophets. What are you doing? And then again, Khidr says, "I told you, you cannot be patient with me." And you know what? Musa is really losing his patience now. He's like, "Okay, you know what? I even let this go. Let's go forward." They go forward and they come to this place where the people are obnoxious, rude, and unjust. Really bad. They come over there, and here you see Musa's upset. Musa's upset with them that these are unjust people, wrong people, and we need to take care of them. And Khidr said, "You're right." So he goes and he sees that their wall is broken. The wall of their house is broken. It's like, for example, in our days we have fences. Fences broken down. So, and here goes Prophet Khidr. He starts to build the wall. And now, like Musa is saying, "Listen, you damaged innocent people's property. You killed an innocent child. And here you are helping unjust people. I mean, These are unjust people. They don't need their walls to be fixed. They need their head to be fixed. We need to go and do something to them. You and me, we can go and get them. And here you are, helping them. You know, I mean, really, are you a prophet or what? What's going on? Really, now Musa can't take it. He's like, no, this is it. And Hizr also is like, also now panic. You know, I mean, you're hired for a job, you go for a job and you do it. You want a peace of mind while doing the job. You don't need someone nagging you anything all the time. Right? Prophet Hizr said, this is enough. That's it. This is a separation between you and me. That's it. No more. I can't have you behind my head always telling me and questioning me and doubting me. And I told you, you cannot understand. You won't know. You see, now, obviously, when Musa was done and Hidr is also done, now Allah wants to explain to Musa what happened. Now Allah wants to explain to Musa what happened. What happened? My friend, understand this. What Allah did to Musa, and through that incident, explained something to us, is that He opened a window into what's happening in the ghaib. Allah opened a window to see what's happening in ghaib that you do not see. Things that are going on behind the curtains, not in the stage. Things that are happening behind so that you understand the rules that are in this world of appearance is not the same as the rules of what is happening behind in the bed. There are different sets of rules. If Musa cannot understand it, how will you understand it? If a prophet like Musa is confused, then it means that you would never understand what's happening behind closed doors. You would be like, what's going on? And hence, now he explains to them what is happening. From here we understand why Allah sends trials. The second reason, why Allah sends trials. And he gave three examples of this incident, so we can understand three reasons that fall into one reason. A, B, and C that fall into one reason. Now Hizr explains to him that, listen, you were upset with the boat. Let me tell you. The boat that we damaged is a boat that these people depend on for their livelihood. Right? They depend on for their livelihood. So now what did we do? There is a king that is coming behind. And he's going to take every boat that's functional from the people so that he can use it in his war. So now I damaged the boat so that the king would not take the boat from them. Now tell me, was it better for those people to have a damaged boat that they can repair later, or for them to lose their boat all of a sudden? Understand the difference? You see, Allah made those people go through this trial of having a damaged boat. See, my friends, it's like this. We get into a small accident. Fender bender. We see that, okay, our car is damaged. Our car is damaged. It's going to take some time to repair. It's better because we can repair the car. We can use it again. But if someone comes and takes your car, now you can't even use it. So Allah will make us go through that small accident so that the bigger calamity that's coming later can be avoided. So the first reason Allah is giving, why He gives a mu'min trials, is that this small hardship has been given to you so you can avoid the greater hardship that's coming later. This is the first reason Allah gives. Why He gives trials to believers. Why? Because there's a greater calamity that's coming. And to avoid that, He gives you this smaller calamity. So that you don't face that, you'll face this one. The first reason. Now we go to the second reason. Now Hizr said, about that young child who looks so beautiful to you. You know, who looks so nice to you. You know, all children are cute. Saddam Hussein was cute. If you saw Saddam and he was a kid, you would also say, cute kid, you know. He also looked cute. No one is ugly when they're young. Everyone's cute when they're young. But you know what? This kid is going to grow up. He belongs to a mu'min family, husband and wife. His father and mother are mu'min people, God-fearing people. And this child is going to grow up to become a tyrant. So, now here, you look at the ayat. I'm not explaining this in detail. That's why, if you understand the ayat, you'll see the eloquence. When it came to the boat, Prophet Hidr took the credit for what he did. He said, I made the hole. He said, I made the hole in the boat so that it could be saved. But when it came to killing the child, he said, Allah made the decision. He said, even there, I don't make a decision of taking someone's life. Allah makes that decision. See the eloquence of how he's speaking. He said, Allah made the decision that he wanted to take this child and give them a better child who's going to serve them. So right now, those parents, looking from their angle, yes, they lost a child and they're crying. They are crying, but it is much better than if their child grows up and becomes a tyrant and oppresses them. You see, right now they're crying, so Allah is making them go through a trial of losing their child. They lost a child, anyone would cry. They would cry for the child. They will mourn for the child. They will be heartbroken at the news of the child's death. But you know what? Allah is going to give a better son to them. Allah is going to give someone better to them. And when they will get that better one, then they will appreciate. They will appreciate the fact that now, yes, this child is better. But they don't know. Allah knows the big picture. See, Allah knows the big picture. So if he takes something from a believer, he only takes it. The second reason, he only takes it so that he can give something better instead of that. This is the second reason that comes under this reason. Now you go to the third reason. He says about those people, you thought were unjust. Yes, they are unjust. And I did build the wall to help them. You know, there is an inheritance that is buried into that wall. It belongs to two orphans. It belongs to orphans. And they are young right now. If the treasure, if that inheritance is found, then these unjust people will not let them keep it. So I build the wall so it will be protected for them. That when they will grow up, they will find their inheritance and make use of it. You see? Simple thing, my friends. The third reason, under this one reason. We come to see now. Why am I doing this? You see, right now these orphans are going to grow up poor. They will not have money. They will be hungry. See, they will be hungry. They grew up hungry. They are poor when they're growing up. If they get the money now, at least they can use it. But how long? But these people will take it away from them. So Allah is making them go through the trials of poverty so that they will get their right when they grow up and where they can defend their right. So the third reason that Allah gives trials to believers is to protect them from the harms that are coming right now so He can give them a reward later. The third reason that He's doing it. So in this one incident, Allah explains the three reasons why He puts believers through trials. Why He puts them through trials, He explained it in this one reason. So that you understand what's happening behind closed door. You understand what's happening in the bed. Just to let you understand, sometimes when Allah is making decisions, it's better that He makes decisions because He can see so many things. He can see so much. If we make those decisions just looking at the one page we read or the one clip we watch in a movie, my friends, we will always make wrong decisions. Now let me just give you this story that I'm sure you all know of Imam Ja'far as-Sadiq alayhi salam. If you have heard it, you know, you can hear it again. If you haven't heard it, you know, this is time you hear it. But I'm not going to explain it in detail. Just going through it fast. A person came to Imam Ja'far Sadiq. He said that he knows the future. So he came to Imam Ja'far Sadiq and says, listen, I want to know the future. I want to know the future. So Imam said, listen, it's not good for you. Not good for you. He said, yes, please tell me. So Imam said, all right, if you insist, I'll tell you. I'm going through it fast, so you know, you'll see the speed, right? So the Imam said, alright, I'll tell you, you know, your horse is going to die. My horse is going to die. So he goes and sells his horse. And in fact, his horse did die the next week. You know, it's like, for example, you find out we have a lemon car, you know, and you want to get rid of it. You know, it's going to break down. So now when someone else buys it, yes, he goes through the problem. You know, he goes through the problem and the trial of his car being broken down. And you'll be happy you got the money for it. Same thing with the guy. He got the money for the horse died, and he's happy. He said, listen, I got the money. You know, see, I knew more. So he goes back to the Imam. And he says, Imam, you said it's going to be a loss, but he made a profit. You know, Imam said, I told you, it's not good for you. It's not good for you to know that. So now what happened? He said, no, tell me more, tell me more. He said, all right, you know, your house is going to break down. My house is going to break down. So he goes and he sells his house. He sells it. It's like, for example, you got to know that your house has a sinkhole. You know, and then you say, well, let's put it in the market and get rid of it. The new owner who comes, the house breaks down, and he goes through the trial and the fitna, right? You are protected from it because you sold it. He got to know that. He sold his house. The house, in fact, did break down. And the new owner went through the loss because he invested in the property. Now it's a loss for him. And in those days, they didn't have insurance. Now they have insurance. Maybe you can be smart about it. But you see that? He didn't have insurance, the house was gone, and he had to face the loss. This guy made the profit. He made the profit, he's like, you know what? You know, I am right, the Imam is wrong. You know, I made profit out of it. So he went back to the Imam. And when he went back to the Imam didn't even wait for the guy to ask, what's going to happen next? He said, let me tell you what's going to happen to you next. He said, tell me, Imam, what's going to happen to you next. He said, you're going to die. I'm going to die? What do you mean I'm going to die? I'm young, I can't die. I'm too healthy to die. I'm too young to die. I'm just saying, listen, Allah was going to take your horse and your house to extend your life. Allah was going to take your horse and your house to extend your life. But you took advantage of it. You made the decision. So now it's your loss. My friends, this is the reason. Mu'mineen are those people who want Allah to make decisions for them. That's why they go so far to make istikhara for important decisions. Why do they make? Because they want Allah to make the decision, or at least have Allah involved in their decision. Have Allah be involved in their decision so that when they make the decision, they are careful. This is the reason, my friends, Allah knows what's happening. We don't know what's happening. What we might feel in a trial is actually not a trial. Allah puts us through the trial so that we don't face the harder trials that are coming. And if we understood that, He wants to give us something, but He wants to give it where we can actually take advantage of it. This is the third point which I'm going to explain tomorrow. But just to make you understand this, so from here you know. My friends, if we know what Allah is going to give us, if He takes something from us, He gives us better than what He has taken from us. Remember this. If you lose something, if you are a believer and you lose something, Allah is taking it from you so He can give something better. There's never nothing that Allah takes that He does not replace it with something better from a moment. If He takes something from a moment, He will replace it with something better. Understand this. This is why when we saw, you know, a princess being enslaved and brought to and sold in the slave market, you know, obviously she went through hardships. She went through trials and fitna. I mean, being someone of a higher status, you know, you become a slave. You're sold in the market. I mean, people looking at you, people looking down on you. Imagine that. But then, when you have the same princess who was taken as a slave and sold as a slave, that Allah put her through that trial because He wanted to give her something better. And what did He give her? He gave her a husband who's an imam and the son who's going to be the ruler of this world. If you ask Narjis, Narjis, was that trial worth it that you went through the slave market in order to become the wife of an imam? See, He took you through that mud so that He can get you and He can prepare you to be the wife of an imam. You see, now tell me, is the reward better or is the trial? Now is the reward better or what? I mean, what has Allah given you and what has He taken from you? He has given you a son who is going to be the imam of this world. Imagine that, my friend. This is the reason that if you understand the whole picture, then you know when Allah takes something from you, He gives something back. And we saw another princess who came from Persia, and she was also sold as a slave. And she was rescued from the slave market by Imam Ali. He rescued her from the slave market. He bought her, and where she was ridiculed, she was being laughed at, she was being looked at, people were looking to buy her. Imam Ali rescued her, brought her home, and made her the wife of Imam Hussein. And she became the mother of Imam Sajjad. Imagine that, my friends, understand this. This is, now she herself said when she came to the house, that there were times in my journey that I made dua to Allah, that Allah, death is better than this. Now when Allah took her to that and gave her a husband like Imam Hussein and a son like Imam Zainul Abideen, now I ask Shahar Banu, tell me, would you make that dua knowing what you got from Allah?
Yeah.
See, my friends, this is the difference. If you know the big picture, you would never look at the small picture and say, Allah, this is wrong. If Allah gives you hardship, it's because He wants to give you something better. This is the second reason why Allah gives us trials. And you see, the trials that He gave to Ahlul Bayt, sometimes you see, it's not to test them, my friend. Sometimes, you know, trials that are given by Allah, especially to those people like the prophets, the imams, and Ahlul Bayt, the trials they go through and the fitna they go through is not to test them whether to see whether they have iman or not. This is for us. If Allah didn't know about their iman, He wouldn't have made them a prophet or imam. Right? He wouldn't have made them a prophet or imam. He knows their iman, that's why He made them. But when a prophet or an imam goes through a trial, Allah doesn't do it to test them. Allah is putting them through these trials and through these difficulties and suffering so He can test the people around them.
Subhanallah.
He can test the ummah by them. This is why He gave them trials. So you see, if Imam Ali's hands are being tied and he's being dragged on the streets, this is not a trial for Ali. This is a trial for those people who are standing around to see what they do to help their imam. See what they do to help their imam. Are they there to help the imam or not? You see that, for example, Ibrahim is being thrown in the fire and you're like, oh, Ibrahim is thrown in the fire. What are you doing about it? He is your prophet, he is your imam right now. Go and help him. My friends, this is where you see that if Imam Hussein is being tested, or for example, if Imam Hussein is going through trials and through hardships and difficulties, this is not to test his faith, this is to see who is truly claiming to be a believer or not. You know, so when you're with Hussein and you see that Hussein is going through hardships and he is calling out Hal min Nasirin Yam Surana, this is to see, what are you doing about it? What are you doing about this call? If Imam Hussein is being dead, don't look at him and say, oh, Allah is putting him through trial. No, He's not putting him through trial. He's putting you through a trial by putting him through a trial. This is the difference, my friends. And this is the reason why you see, maybe the wisdom of Allah is that Mazlum Imam, when he made the call of Hal min Nasirin Yam Surana, then that call should not go unanswered. Maybe that's the wisdom Imam Hussein brought along when he has. The reason why he brought along Ali Asghar. So even when he made the call, that the call of the Imam does not go unanswered. Even if Ali Asghar has to answer it. You see, my friends, this is remembrance in the tragedies of Imam Hussein and Ahlul Bayt are such. You know, no matter how much you repeat it, you know, it's the same emotion, it's the same expression of love. And in fact, it's more so every time. It's just growing. You know, I just want to give you an idea before we remember Aliyazka. Just give you an idea of what it is. My friend, you see, this is not something that you can create. It's not something that you can emulate. It's something that is real. You know, when we speak about crying and mourning, we see that, you know, books can also make you cry when you read it. Sometimes movies that are dramatic can also make you cry. You see tears are coming out. But there's a difference. You know, when you watch a movie that's dramatic and makes you cry, the issue is that they have to make it in such a way that it leads to that moment. And then you see your crying. But if that suspense can only last when you watch it the first time, when you watch it the second time or the third time or the fourth time, you'll see it's finished. You know, you see the same thing, but you can't cry anymore. Tears are not coming anymore. And anything you see in life. So, here when we look at Ashura, when we look at the tragedy of Imam Hussein, every year the same thing is being repeated. Every year, there's nothing new. We're not adding anything new. We're not saying anything new. Every year the same thing is being repeated. Everyone knows the ending. Everyone knows the second line. When we say that Abbas went to the river, who is thinking that the water is coming back? He says, Abbas went to the river. What's the second line? Everyone knows what happened. They are not expecting for the water to come back. They know the water didn't come back. But still you cry. Still you're crying. My friends, understand this. This is not something that has to do with drama, or it doesn't have to do with anything that is melodramatic. This is a real tragedy. And this tragedy of Imam Hussein that is so real, and it's the same thing repeated everywhere, but you see the tears are always new. The tears are always new. The crying is always new. This is the dua of Hazrat Fatima. This is the true tragedy of the spirit that Allah has given us. So now when we see that Imam Hussein called Hal min Nasir and Yansurana, you see that Ali Asghar is answering from the tent. He makes himself fall down from the cradle and he's crying. And Imam Hussein knows why he's crying, because he got him for this reason. You know, Ali Asghar, the sister of Ali Asghar, Fatima Sughra, wanted to keep Ali Asghar. And Ali Asghar was holding on to her, did not want to leave her. And she also said that if he does not go in anyone else's hand, let him be with me. And everyone tried to take him, but Ali Asghar would not leave his sister. And Ali Asghar was only a little child, and he's just born. But you see that when Imam Hussein heard this, he came there. And he said, whispered something in the ears of Ali Asghar. And right away Ali Asghar left Sughra, and he held the hands of Imam Hussein. He held the hands of Imam Hussein. Now the time had come for why Ali Asghar came there. When Imam Hussein made the call, Hal min Nasirin, then Ali Asghar fell off the cradle. And when he fell off the cradle, and then all the ladies started crying, Imam Hussein came and asked, what is happening? He said, Hussein, when you made the call of Hal min Nasirin, Ali Asghar has not stopped crying from that moment. Imam Hussein took Ali Asghar in his hand, again brought him near, and told him something. I don't know what he said, but whatever he said, Ali Asghar stopped crying from that moment. He stopped crying from that moment. Now Imam Hussein brings out Ali Asghar. And who would know that a 6-month-old child is going to be the greatest worker of Imam Hussein?
Who knew that Imam Hussein is going to bring out the strongest warrior at the end? No one was expecting this. Ali Akbar came out, but the army wasn't moved like this. Abbas came out, but the army did not bend like this. But when he brought out Ali Asghar and showed Ali Asghar to the people, then the whole army was shaken by the sight of Ali Asghar. This young child, what has he done? Imam Hussein appealing to their humanity and saying, this child is not your enemy. I am your enemy. Don't let him die. He's about to die. Do not let him die. My friend Ali Asghar was brought out and the whole army was shaken, and it was so much that Umar ibn Sa'd said, who is this warrior that Hussein brought out? Who is this warrior that Hussein brought out that has caused this division in my army? Everyone is arguing with one another, and Umar ibn Sa'd sees this division and he calls out to his master archer, Hurmala, and he tells Hurmala, Ikta kalam al-Hussein. Hurmala, cut the speech of Hussein. Don't you see Hussein is giving a speech? Hussein is not giving the speech. It is Ali Asghar who is giving the speech. Ali Asghar is shaking everyone, and Hussein brings forward Ali Asghar, and they see that. But then Hurmala, he is looking at this whole scene and he shoots the arrow, but the arrow misses. And when the arrow missed, now you see everyone is looking at Hurmala. Hurmala, why did you miss that arrow? He said, every time I shoot, I see Rasulullah in front of my eyes. He says, why are you killing my friends? What has he done to you? And then he tells both of his eyes and shoots it. And then when he shoots it, it goes in the neck of Ali Asghar. Imam Hussein looks at this son of his. My son Imam Hussein looks at Ali Asghar, looks at his face. How can he see the face? Imagine you have a 6-month-old child and his neck is broken, but Ali Asghar is smiling. He is not upset. Hussein puts the blood of Ali Asghar on his face. He puts the blood of Ali Asghar on his face, turns towards Medina, and I say that Imam Hussein calls up to Rasulullah and said, Ya Rasulullah, Ya Jaddi, my grandfather, I have made wuzu for my Asr prayers. I have made my wuzu. Put the blood of Ali Asghar, I made wuzu. He brought back Ali Asghar. He brings back Ali Asghar to this tent. What can I say? Just last few sentences I will say. And you give your condolences to Fatima. You give your condolences to Fatima, who has lost her whole household on the day of Karbala. Ali, he brings back Ali Asghar inside the tent. And then when his mother sees him, she cries. And Imam Hussein makes it right for Ali Asghar. Imam Hussein, you know what is going to happen. But the mother of Ali Asghar doesn't know. She's happy that a grave is made for Ali Asghar. But when the 11th of Muharram comes and the reward is given to the soldiers to search for all the heads, whoever brings a head will get a reward. Then they collect all the heads. They realize that one child of a man was killed. They can't find him, and they all go out to find the little grave of Ali Asghar. They knew that Imam Hussein made the grave for him. They go and search for the grave, and they search with their spear, putting it in the ground to see where the grave is, until they find the grave of Ali Asghar. They bring out the little child from the grave, slaughter its head, and put this head in the spear with the pistol.
لعن الله الظالمين لكم من الأولين والآخرين والأرحام بالدار الجميل.
يا رب الذين ظلموا أيهم. يا محمود حكمهم. يا الله حكمهم. يا فاطر اسم الله. يا مسلم الناس من يقضي والإنسان يحسن. والله يوزن الطاولة. يوزن الوزن.